The court will call cause number 03180037-5-CV, CEC Entertainment versus the Comptroller's Office. Mr. Siegel.
Good morning, I'm Cliff Ryan Walton, representing the Comptroller.
Good morning, sir.
May I proceed?
Yes. I think we've already got your announcements, you guys can just fire away.
May I inquire as to whether the justices have handouts that we get sent over?
We do, yes, sir.
This is a sales tax case. In some ways, it's similar to a case that Justice Rose wrote a very well-reasoned opinion in the DTWC case involving hotels. In some ways, it's a little different because here we're dealing with items that were transferred as an integral part of a taxable service. And so that's different than the DTWC case, but there are some lessons from that case. We also think the 7-Eleven case is important because that case did involve items transferred as an integral part of a taxable service. So it's really the same definition that's involved in that case. I'd like to maybe just give the court an overview of our position. In the appellant's brief on page 13, we have a chart that I think is helpful in summarizing quickly what the facts show and what we think the key facts are. The chart shows that CEC transfers these gaming machines, and of course CEC, as we all know, is Chuck E. Cheese. If we don't have kids, we probably don't spend a lot of time
with
Chuck E. Cheese.
I was wondering if it would picture my money going into the machines.
No, Your Honor. But the machines are transferred by CEC to the guests, albeit for a brief period of time, for the customers to engage in what we've referred to as self-amusement. And as the chart indicates, and this is supported by the record, CEC does not use the machines to perform any amusement service. Now that would be different than auto repair, right? Because you have workers at the auto repair place using equipment which they're really consuming to repair my car, or personal services, a massage. You know, the masseuse would be rubbing lotion on my body. You know, that lotion would be absorbed into the body and would be transferred. So the idea of performing a service versus as providing the machines is really at the heart of this case.
Well, but I assume you're going to talk about the cable case and then the bowling shoe case, and especially the fitness case out of this court, and how those differ.
Yeah, we will, Your Honor. We will. But just as by way of overview, we think the facts are that CEC does not use any of these gaming equipment to perform any services, and that's important. Who uses the services? The consumer, the individual who puts the token in. When that token is put in, the machine is transferred to them.
But so, is it just having these machines in the stores, the service that's being provided? I mean, the parents wouldn't be coming to the Chuck E. Cheese without these machines or the pizza or whatever, and so isn't just the fact that they're in the store the service that's being provided? So I mean, you are providing the service by having these machines in there.
Well, the machines are really what Chuck E. Cheese is providing. They're not performing services. There's a very big linguistic divide between performing something and providing something. On page 20 of the appellant's brief, we have definitions of perform. And since you asked the question, I'd like to just focus on that. Here are some examples in the dictionary using the word perform. The surgeon performed the operation. Okay, I have my duties to perform. You know, as judges, you have duties. You're performing duties. Perform is an action verb, which here means that the piece of equipment is used by the seller of the service to actually perform the service, and I gave some examples of that. CEC does not use any of this equipment to perform any services. Now, the best test of that proposition is, in our booklets, tab 1, we have the tax code provision set forth. And the first tax code provision, and I have this in red because it is so important, section 151.335, coin-operated services, which goes directly to Justice Smith's question. It refers to amusement and personal services provided through coin-operated machines that are operated by the consumer. The legislature in this particular statute has recognized that coin-operated amusement machines are operated by the consumer. The consumer is performing whatever needs to be performed with that machine, and the company that's providing the machine is not performing a service. Which means, to get back to Justice Rose's question, I don't think Clearview Cable is even applicable. They cite two provisions where they say we have to prove care, custody, and control. They also say that these machines are deemed to be consumed by Chuck E. Cheese because there's a provision that says, and I'm paraphrasing, equipment that is used to perform a service is deemed to be consumed by the service performer. Well, none of that applies. So we think that the trial court really erred in getting into the whole issue of care, custody, and control, and getting into this provision that deems a company to be the consumer of the items, because that all gets back to whether the services are performed by Chuck E. Cheese, and they're performing a service with the equipment as opposed to just providing the equipment. And that's really the thrust of our case. So I want to
151.302B, which is where some of that care, custody, and control language comes from, doesn't apply, is your argument, because
no.
of the nature of the way you guys provide the entertainment.
Right, and we've kind of bolded the word perform. And you're going to have to violate the plain meaning of the word perform and reword and redefine these statutes to try to shoehorn what CEC does into this care, custody, and control analysis and this other analysis that they rely upon. We don't perform anything with that equipment. Now think about where services are performed using equipment. The auto repair example, someone gives me a massage, I don't get pedicures or manicures, but if I did, or my hair gets cut and they put gel in my hair, I mean, somebody is performing a service on me or my car or something like that. The 7-Eleven case, there, the software that was transferred was used to perform accounting services by 7-Eleven. So there's an example of where the items in question are used to perform services. And that triggers all these other provisions that I think the trial judge got hung up on. And really, we don't think that was a path that should have been gone down at all.
So does that leave you with transfer?
Yes. Yeah, and let me focus on transfer. Transfer, we think, looking at tab one in my booklet, if it's helpful to look there, I've kind of have the key provisions at the bottom, section 151.006, sale for resale. See, I've got A, 1, and 2 at the bottom. And the language in blue is sort of the first path, what I'll call the resale path. And it talks about normal course of business. There has to be a resale in the normal course of business as an integral part of a taxable service. So the taxable service, obviously, is the entertainment service. And the question is, were these machines transferred as part of that service? And we say that they were. Then the second piece is what's in green. This is sort of the second path.
Mr. Siegel, can I confess something? I printed this out myself. And I recently wouldn't let the courts waste the money to buy a color printer. And so when you say green and blue, it doesn't help me any.
I'm sorry.
I brought the wrong copy.
Could we hand up a copy with the colors on it?
Sure, if you'd like. I can read along, too.
But anyway, I think you can see the language. But A3, which we have in green, talks about a purchaser who acquires the property for the purpose of transferring it as an integral part of a taxable service. So here it's more the word transfer. But I think really A1 and A3 probably amount to about the same thing. The court may disagree, but I think at the end of the day, the question is there a transfer of possession? Because a transfer of possession is one way you can sell something. And transfer is obviously referring to a transfer of possession. So on the next page of tab one, you see the definition of sale. And one way that something is sold is possession. Now, there is no temporal or timing limit on the sale for resale exemption. And what's really interesting, and I was fascinated to find this, is tab two is a letter ruling that came out from the controller's office recently involving the taxability of music that was downloaded temporarily to a jukebox. So the controller said that this company that had a jukebox where they were downloading music, and if you kind of parse through it, I've highlighted in green, hopefully you have the green now, it dealt with music that is downloaded only for the time it takes to play the title. So there was this jukebox, and they were downloading the music to the jukebox only while that song was being played. I mean, think about the limited rights that were acquired by the owner of the jukebox. The song is downloaded, played, and that's it. They don't have the right to sell that to anybody else. But yet, the controller says, digital music temporarily downloaded to a jukebox is subject to sales tax, regardless of the time it exists in the jukebox. So our point is, similarly with resales, you can have a transfer to a lot of different people of the same item for a short period of time. There isn't a timing requirement. You know, you can rent a car by the hour. You can rent a car, for a month. You can rent a car for a week. And so it's just not true that the controller gets to put all these limitations on the resale exemption, which is what they've tried to do. Now, the Healthcare Service Corporation case and the Rourke Amusement case, I think, are very important in terms of our Supreme Court's outlining the way that these statutes should be interpreted.
Before you go there, you mentioned the word rent, and that's a question that I had. Is there some reason why you all aren't arguing this as being some type of a rent or lease? Does that get into other complications, or?
That gets into some other complications. Of course, there's a case out of this court, Cantu Enterprises, and A2 is a rental clause, but it has a sole purpose requirement in A2. So we feel like the rental provision is probably a different burden, and we don't really think that this is a rental anyway. We think that what is being purchased is an amusement service, and that is being taxed as the purchase of amusement. If you look at the definition of amusement service, this is really not an equipment rental. Now, there's a case called the Chevron case, which is very helpful because Chevron deals with what it means to transfer something. Chevron involved scaffolding. The scaffolding company set up the scaffolding. You know, this was a big petrochemical plant with very dangerous stuff going on, and the scaffolding company set up the scaffolding. They controlled access to the scaffolding. They pretty much had to be there for safety reasons. All Chevron did is their employees climbed on the scaffolding to do repairs. This court, in a very heavily contested case, I don't think Justice Rose was on that panel, said that Chevron took possession of the scaffolding because they were using the scaffolding, and that was really possession, even though the scaffolding company was managing the scaffolding, controlling access, and was really on site. So my point is that when the money is put into these machines, the kids play the machines, and the testimony is those machines are not touched by CEC. That customer has the right to that machine. If another guest tries to interfere with their use of the machine, that's probably where the manager would intervene and say, hey, you're interfering with one of our customers' use of the machine, and they've paid for that. Now, this case is so much different than fitness, I hardly think I need to spend a lot of time on it. Fitness involved a health club business model where you just paid to join a health club. And Justice Puryear, in a memorandum, unpublished opinion that was very brief, I think he was focusing on the fact that when you go to a health club, you really don't have the right to use a particular machine. You're not putting money into the exercise machine. Whereas in the case of CEC, it's kind of like the hotel case. I mean, you're paying to use the hotel, you get assigned a room, you get these specific consumables that you can use if you want to. Here, you're putting money into the machine. You put that money in the machine, you turn the machine on, you take possession of the machine, you have care, custody, and control over the machine, according to the conclusive, unrefuted testimony. So the fitness case, they cite that in every case I have involving anything. And I think it's kind of humorous to me because that was a memorandum, unpublished opinion that was very fact-specific, and yet they try to claim that it sets forth these broad principles that have fundamentally changed the law. It's not true. The 7-Eleven case dealt with software that was transferred, and even though the 7-Eleven was still involved in using that software and benefited from the software, the court says in 7-Eleven, their transfer doesn't mean that the transferor doesn't benefit from having that item there. In other words, 7-Eleven was still using that software and was interacting with the software. That software was probably licensed for a limited period of time too. And the court declined in that case to impose the kind of limitations that they now want to impose based on fitness, and that's not really what fitness says.
But when someone puts money into these machines and they have it, the controller for 2 minutes, I think is what is in the briefs, kind of at the average. They don't have complete control over the entire machine. They can only play the machine, correct? They don't get to say I have 2 minutes and I want to open this thing up and pull all the tickets out. I mean, they have to play the machine to get the tickets. They can't move the machine from different parts of the store. They can't go in at the beginning and say, hey, here's $1,000. I want to take this machine out for 8 hours to my house and play it, correct? I mean, so they don't have complete control. They just have the ability to play it within a certain time period and handle it a certain way, correct?
Well, first of all, we're dealing with an amusement service, right? So if someone wanted to buy these machines and take them home, that wouldn't be purchasing an amusement service. So we have to look at the economic realities of the kind of service we're dealing with. Think about renting a car. I rent a car. Do I have the right to take the car home and take it apart? Most cars, you don't service the car. You can't drive the car to Mexico. Any kind of a rental, I hate to go back to rentals, but with a rental, for example, the bowling ball example that Justice Rose cited, you use the bowling ball at the bowling center, but you can't take the bowling ball home. The bowling shoes, you don't take those home. Any kind of a transfer as part of a service is going to be limited in the context of the actual service that's involved. Take a massage, right? Okay, maybe I don't have the money for the long massage. I get the 15-minute massage, right? Well, things are going to be transferred in the context of that 15-minute massage and aren't going to be transferred in the context of an hour massage. You know, all of these services, if you read the list of taxable services, they're all different kinds of services, and they all have to be interpreted in the context of the nature of that service. You can't put these arbitrary limits that they want to put. Oh, you have to take it home. There's no take-home requirement.
You mentioned Clearview Cable really not being applicable here, but isn't it helpful to look at in terms of where you draw the line on transfer? I mean, who has control of it? What's happening with it at the time? Who's making the decisions regarding it? I mean, it gets into some of those issues.
It could be relevant, but I think it'd be relevant for the taxpayer because there they took a very flexible approach and said, hey, this is in my house, but you have care, custody, and control, even though you're not going to take the cable box apart and start messing with the wiring. They're going to call the police if you do that. I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Okay.
Thanks,
Mr. Siegel. Morning, Mr. Kennedy.
Good morning. May it please the court. Chuck E. Cheese's purchases of the coin-operated machines and their component parts do not qualify for the sale for resale exemption for three reasons. First, Chuck E. Cheese does not transfer possession of the coin-operated machines to its customers. Second, Chuck E. Cheese is a statutorily designated consumer of the coin-operated machines. And third, Chuck E. Cheese never transfers care, custody, and control of the coin-operated machines to its customers. This court could affirm for any one of those three reasons. However, turning to the first point, Chuck E. Cheese purchases coin-operated machines and their component parts and then uses those to sell an amusement service. That is precisely what happened in Fitness International. Fitness International purchased equipment, gym equipment, for placement in its gym facilities and then used those to sell an amusement service. Exactly the same scenario we had here. Both of them allow the customers to use the equipment as part of the amusement service, but that is not a transfer.
But don't we get some further benefit to the customer here because they put in a coin for that specific machine for that specific time? I mean, isn't that the difference between the two?
That is a difference, but I think it's a distinction without a difference under the statute, because here we're talking about what is a transfer. The consideration for the transfer doesn't matter. In both cases, they could use the equipment for however long they want. In Chuck E. Cheese, however, it depends on how many coins they put into the machine. In Fitness, it depended on, whether the machine was available for them to use. But it's the same scenario, whether or not there's a transfer of possession, whether or not they have access to the whole thing. And Chuck E. Cheese, actually, the customer has less access than in Fitness International. In Fitness International, they could change the weights and the settings and all of that. In Chuck E. Cheese, the customer doesn't have access to that. Chuck E. Cheese customers put in a coin, they get access to the game. They can't control the volume of the machine. They can't control the difficulty settings of the machine. They can't control how many tickets it spits out. They can't control any of that aspect of the use of the machine. They also don't have access to the locked portion of the machines. So to that point, there was more of a transfer of rights in Fitness than there is here in Chuck E. Cheese. And both companies at trial testified that the customer had control of the machines. Now, in fitness, the court said, well, you know, that's the conclusory testimony. This is really the court's purview to decide. We would say it's the same thing here, and the uncontested findings of fact bear that out. Fitness went on to say that merely providing access and use of the equipment is not a transfer of legal possession under the sale for resale statute. That's precisely the scenario that we have here. We're providing access to and use of the coin-operated machines to the customers, which are typically children aged 2 to 12, sticking a coin in, and they just want to play the games. They don't want legal possession of the machines. The vice president, the treasurer testified to that. The reason that it doesn't matter, in his view, that the customer doesn't have access to the locked portions is the kids don't care, and that's precisely the point here. They're buying an amusement service. They're not buying a transfer of legal possession of the coin-operated machines.
What's the relevance of whether that's a taxable amusement service or not in these recent changes in the legislature that purport to kind of sort of go back and explain that it's a clarification as opposed to a change?
So I think that goes back to the Cantu scenario, where Cantu cited National Bank shares talking about, in order to fit within a tax exemption, because they're strictly construed, it has to fit within the letter and the spirit of the law. And here, the spirit of the law and what this was designed to do was to ensure that when there's two separate transactions, two separate sales, there's not sales tax imposed twice on the same piece of tangible personal property. So it wasn't meant, and this is in Cantu, it wasn't meant to ensure that a certain piece of equipment or a certain piece of tangible property or a certain category is never taxed. And that's precisely what would happen under Chuck E. Cheese's reading of the statute, is that coin-operated machines used to provide an amusement service would never be subject to sales tax in the state of Texas. So the statutory amendment goes back to fix that and clarify that that was never meant to be the case. I'm not sure if that answers your question. I think that gets to what you were asking. But the amendment goes on. What it did was it took amusement services out of the realm of taxable services. And that's important because it made clear that the service has to be taxable in order for the sale for resale exemption to apply. So if the service isn't taxable, the sale for resale exemption doesn't apply to the tangible personal property used as a part of, or transferred as a part of that service. So it made amusement services not taxable. And I think it was meant to correct the Rourke decision. If you recall, in Rourke, the Supreme Court issued a decision that said amusement services are taxable, but they're taxable that amusement services provided through a coin-operated machine are taxable, but they're then exempt from taxation. So it inherently put these, it was plush animals in a coin-operated machine. I don't know if you've seen the claw machines, but they have plush animals, you operate the claw, you can pick up a plush animal. The state argued in that case that the plush animals, because there was no consideration paid for them and there was no tax ever paid on them, that the sale for resale exemption couldn't apply. And the Supreme Court said, no, this is a taxable service. It doesn't matter that it's later exempt from taxation in terms of whether or not this is a taxable service. So the sale for resale exemption focuses on whether or not the service is taxable.
Did I hear you correctly? So if we were to go with CEC's position, these coin-operated machines would never be levied a tax on any sales?
Coin-operated machines, correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So when CEC buys them and then when they subsequently sell them after their useful ability, there would never be a tax levied? Is that what you're stating?
No, there could be, let me clarify, there could be a tax when they ultimately sell them. That's not really an issue in this case. So the question would be whether or not tax is ever paid on the sale of the coin-operated machine as new. So typically, tax is imposed on any sale in the state absent an exemption. Here, there's an exemption if you use it as an integral part of a taxable service. So for instance, if you buy paint and you paint a car, If somebody provides that service, they paint cars for a living, they buy paint, they then use the paint to paint the car. There's an exemption for that because part of that service will include the tax on the paint that's used to paint the car. Here, what happens is Chuck E. Cheese purchases the coin-operated machines, And then because the amusement service is not taxed, there's no sales tax ever paid for the use of that machine. Now, in the record, there's some indication that perhaps sometimes Chuck E. Cheese sells the machines after they're done with them, but they don't always sell the machines. So to your point, there may or may not be some minimal amount of sales tax paid at the end, but that's not relevant to this case, because the issue is, what's the purpose for purchasing it? And they didn't purchase for the purpose of later reselling it. They purchased it for the purpose of performing an amusement service here.
On whether it's a taxable service, I mean, that seems to be relatively clear given the legislature's 2019 changes. Was that in practice taxed before? Do we have any record of what
amusement
the practice
service
has been? Yes.
The amusement service was not taxed before. So amusement services performed through a coin-operated machine were not taxed, and that's under 151.335. So there was an exemption, and that was the issue in Rourke Amusement, was that they're in the realm of taxable services. So they are taxable services, but it's then exempt later. So the taxes were never paid. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So this all gets back to the plain meaning of transfer. Transfer is to legally convey title, which is not at issue here, or to transfer legal possession. That's the definitions that this court held in Fitness International. Chuck E. Cheese, under that plain meaning, does not transfer the coin-operated machines. The customers, and these are uncontested findings of fact, the customers couldn't move the machines. The Chuck E. Cheese programmed how difficult it was to play the game, how much time the customer got, how many tickets the customer got when they used one of those skill machines. Customers couldn't do that. Chuck E. Cheese didn't allow them access to it. Chuck E. Cheese made sure that the games were safe for the customers to use. They did this on a daily basis. They checked all the games. They supervised them. The court held that Chuck E. Cheese primarily controlled these machines at all times. They supervised the customer's use of the machines. Chuck E. Cheese testified that if a customer was misusing the equipment, they would actually ask them to leave. So they are exercising supervision and control over the machines even while the customer is playing it. There was an example specifically in the record that if a child jumps up on the skee ball machine and wants to roll the ball from there, they'll ask them to come down and not use the machine in that manner. And it's because Chuck E. Cheese has primary possession of this at all time. And that only makes sense because Chuck E. Cheese is using these machines to make money. If they don't have primary control of them, then they lose the ability to make money. To my second point, Chuck E. Cheese is the statutorily designated consumer of these machines. Under 151.058, a person performing services under Chapter 151 is the consumer of machinery or equipment used in performing the services. Now, Chuck E. Cheese says they don't perform a service. That's not correct. Chuck E. Cheese does perform a service using the machines. They set up these stores from the beginning with an alignment that works for their customers. They put the machines in specific places. They have a kid check that makes sure the kids can't leave. They choose which games to purchase. They customize those games based on their needs. They choose the difficulty of the games again. They choose how many prize tickets each of the machines awards for each play so that they can align that with their business model so that they're not giving away too many prizes for a quarter. They choose how long a coin gets to play each machine, again, in alignment with their business model. They make sure the games are safe. They clean, maintain, and repair the machines. They have technical people in the machine that do repairs every morning. They have game room attendants that are cleaning the machines at all times to make sure that they're attractive to the customers. And there's really not a distinction in the way that the statute uses the terms provide and perform. And that's because inherent in the nature of a service is the fact that labor performed in the interest of others. So if someone's providing a service, generally speaking, they're inherently performing that service. That's why the statute uses the two terms interchangeably. If you look at the heading of 151.058, it talks about performing services. The body of that provision, it talks about providing services in the heading. In the body, it talks about performing services. So the statute uses them interchangeably, and even the resale provision. So typically, when you are subject to a sales tax exemption, you are entitled to a resale certificate that you issue to the sellers. That way you never have to pay the sales tax. Here, under Chuck E. Cheese's reading of keeping it performed provided separate, they can never get a resale certificate for the purchases of these machines. So we end up in a situation where Chuck E. Cheese is purchasing the machines every time, paying tax to the vendor every time, and then coming back to the comptroller and asking for a refund every single time they purchase a machine. That doesn't make sense under the statute. It's not a scheme that the legislature would put on, in place. Turning to my third point, there was no transfer of care, custody, and control in this case. And that kind of gets back to whether or not there was a transfer of possession. They're getting at almost the same question. As Clearview Cable stated, it's really about who has primary possession of the machines. So they looked at who had primary care, custody, and control of the cable equipment in that case. Now, a big part of the analysis was that the cable equipment stayed on the premises of the customer. Here, the Chuck E. Cheese's equipment stays on Chuck E. Cheese's premises. The customers can't move it even within the facilities. So there's an inherent primary possession that is always attached to Chuck E. Cheese, and their supervision only goes to further that. Chuck E. Cheese also testified as to care that maintenance was a point of pride for them. They're always maintaining the machines. They want to keep them clean. They want to keep the customers friendly, and they want to keep people coming back. That's only natural under their business model. And then control. Chuck E. Cheese controls where the machines are, how they're used. They supervise the customer's use of the machines. I know I'm getting back to some of the same elements that we talked about with transfer, but there's a lot of overlap here. I think that covers my 3 points. So unless the court has any further questions, I'll yield the remainder of my time and just ask that you affirm the trial court's judgment that Chuck E. Cheese take nothing.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy.
Thank you.
Let me hit a couple of things quickly. The statutory change, if anything, that helps us, because the legislature dramatically changed the law. It was that these were taxable services, but they were exempt. Why? Because, as Mr. Kennedy didn't mention, there's an occupational tax that's imposed on these coin-operated machines. There's a lot of testimony about that at the trial. So the legislature decided to change the law and say that these are not taxable services. Strangely, I think they kept the exemption in, so I don't know exactly what they were doing, but this is a change. Now, I think...
What do we do with that language where they purport to say that it's clarification?
Right. Well, just because you say in a statute that it's a clarification doesn't make it a clarification. There's plenty of cases, and I can give the court citations to it if that would be helpful, or we can file a letter with the citations. But under Texas law, one legislature cannot opine as to the intent of prior legislatures. And if you change a law, in other words, you amend it to replace something, that is not a clarification, even if the legislature calls it a clarification. And I think that's what the law is. In fact, there's a case that I argued 2 weeks ago, the AMC case. In the AMC case, the comptroller argued in their brief that the clarification this court relied upon in AMC was illegitimate because you can never rely on clarifications, they argue in that case. Now, in AMC, you had a true clarification because the provision clarified something that was unclear, but it didn't change the existing law. When you take the existing law and replace that with something different that's inconsistent, that's a change, it's not a clarification. So the difference between a change and a clarification really shows why the controller's position is wrong in AMC and in this case. So that's my answer on that. I mean, we can file a letter with the case law on this if it would be helpful. I think probably the court is familiar with that issue. I also want to talk briefly about the transfer issue. Now let's think about this. The bowling ball example, the digital download letter ruling, all of these are situations where you have a transfer of possession in a very limited way, that is still a transfer. I don't think the fitness case says that you have to have a complete transfer of all legal rights in the property. That's just not the case. I don't think that's what fitness says. I don't think that that's what a transfer is. And I think if you look at the Chevron case, that was an opinion that Justice Puryear, I believe, wrote. And in that opinion, he explains that that even though the scaffolding provider continued to operate the scaffolding, they did many of the same things, frankly, that they're saying Chuck E. Cheese does, although I'm not sure I agree with them on the record. But Justice Puryear, in that opinion, says that the possession was with the party that was using the item. And, of course, the nature of the service is going to determine the extent to which possession to an item is transferred. The statute doesn't require a complete transfer of possession in the sense of you can take it home, you can destroy it, you can loan it out to other people. I mean, that's just not what has ever been required, both from the controller interpretation, this court's case law. I think Justice Puryear's opinion really dealt with the business model of a health club where you really don't have a right to use anything. They can tell you to get off the treadmill because you've been on the treadmill too long. You know, and I think that was the gist of that opinion. And they're taking maybe a fairly general discussion and trying to change Texas law.
Is there any distinction between possession of the machine itself versus possession of the entertainment service?
Well, I think that if you look at the statutory provision, the service is really the provision of entertainment, and the service is only provided by the customer using the machine. I mean, it's a coin-operated service, and in fact, that's what the statutes talk about. And the statute says coin-operated services are operated by the customer, which pretty much articulates the fact that here CEC doesn't do anything to provide the service. Now, he suggests that because there's maintenance going on, I mean, sure, there's people to clean the floor, they have security, they maintain the property, but none of the things that are being done by CEC are doing anything other than facilitating the provision of that equipment. It's the child or the adult who's playing the basketball or playing the video game. That's where the amusement comes from. That's the service. Sure, there's labor provided. I mean, there's people that fix the lighting here, right? Are we saying the people that fix the lighting are providing judging services? No, they're not. In other words, the provision of the service is the example of the surgeon that's used in the dictionary, right? The guy that, you know, fixes the lighting in the hospital is not providing medical services. I mean, they're stretching the idea of providing a service using the item far beyond the plain meaning of that phrase. If you look carefully at these statutes, it talks about using the property to perform a service. It never says merely providing something to a customer who then amuses themselves that qualifies. I mean, they are rewriting those statutes through sleight of hand. The DTWC case, I think, is also relevant because think about the hotel consumables. Those hotel consumables are used by the hotel, right? They put their name on them. That was what they argued unsuccessfully. The maid has those consumables on her cart. She has them on the cart. And, you know, she has to, the toilet paper is half used, so she's got to fold the end of the toilet paper, or the soap is left on the floor for the next guest. I mean, obviously the hotel is using those consumables to provide them to the customer. So we don't think this is a very clear, very close case at all. You should reverse. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Siegel. Mr. Kennedy, interesting case. The case will be submitted, and the court will stand in recess. Thank you.